You're listening to the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only pod that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Welcome to episode 155. Coming up on this week's show, how Chicharito will impact MLS TV ratings, all of the details about the Premier League on Peacock, ICC demands more in order to stay relevant, latest news about Portuguese TV rights, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined once again by Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, returning from the cold north of Baltimore back to the chilly South Florida. So we've been pretty cold, actually, North Florida too, pretty cold this week. What were your adventures like in Baltimore at the what used to be called the NSCAA convention is now the United Soccer Coaches Convention? It comes off the tongue a little bit easier, but what were your observations from this annual event?
Well, first off, in terms of climate, I left Baltimore the night. I woke up the night I flew out. It was about 38 degrees. Flew to Jacksonville, your neck of the woods. And the next morning when I woke up in Jacksonville, St. Augustine area, it was 41 degrees. And then this back to South Florida this morning, wake up in Fort Lauderdale area, and it was 40 degrees. So the cold weather followed me south, not to three locales. So apologies to everyone in Florida, including you, that I seem to have brought this weather with me from Baltimore. But yeah, the NSCAA, or now United Soccer Coaches Convention, was brilliant. It was great for me personally to reconnect with so many people that I hadn't seen in a while. That convention is still very, very vibrant. There had been a lot of concern, Chris, and I had expressed a concern privately to a number of people that maybe the convention wasn't going to be the same without MLS participating. And with increased tensions, there was an accommodation, but there's also increased tensions between U.S. Soccer and the United Soccer Coaches, even to the point where they're offering competing curriculums and competing classes, courses for coaches and coaching badges. So I thought, well, you know, this might hurt the convention, which always for me, and I think for most people in the soccer industry in the United States, was the granddaddy of them all. It was our version of the Consumer Electronics Show, right? It's that kind of show for us. It's that kind of week for us. In fact, I think the impact of MLS not being there was simply that you had less player agents running around and fewer male professional soccer-focused media. USL didn't get a booth either this year. They've typically had a booth, and when I worked for the NASL, we always had a booth at the show. But there were still a fair number of media, the likes of Charlie Bohm and Paul Kennedy and John Tannenwald, and all the people who cover the women's game were there because the NWSL draft was still there. Mm-hmm. Carly Lloyd was there in person. Sam Uwis was there in person, in addition to other journalists that still came and covered it. And all of the big vendors were still there, and all the coaches from around the country were still there. And in fact, I saw former Swansea coach Paul Clement wandering the hall.
Oh my gosh.
So once again, getting coaches from abroad, as NSCAA always did. I'm happy to report to the listeners out there and the people who are concerned about the health of the entire sport in this country, Chris, not just Major League Soccer or USL, that NSCAA, the United Soccer Coaches, now the United Soccer Coaches, is as strong as ever. The convention was as good as ever, and the field sessions, the classroom sessions, the general vibe around the place was all very positive. So the business of soccer, the game of soccer continues to grow in the United States outside of those two top professional leagues. The college game, everyone was there, the youth game, the DAs, the ECNL, everybody was at this conference. NWSL, as I mentioned, still held the draft. So really great week and a positive thing to report, because I don't want to get too conspiratorial here, Chris, but there has been a lot of chatter, a lot of buzz that MLS and U.S. Soccer would like to see the United Soccer Coaches maybe diminish in importance. Well, that isn't happening yet from where I sit.
So you say, and this is the first time we've had a chance to talk about this, so you say that everyone was there. The question I have for you, Kartik, is that in previous years, I think even last year or maybe 2 years ago, for a couple of years, actually Fox Soccer, a Fox Soccer channel, once it was known, I think 1 year had a town hall with Wijnaldum, another year had kind of a live show that they were doing, or they were doing some interviews with different talent, etc., and former players. So what? Not just Fox, but what about the television crews? I mean, beIN Sports, NBC, ESPN, Fox, any television celebs there?
And actually, after Fox Soccer went away, beIN became the kind of de facto partner. They didn't have the formal partnership that Fox Soccer had. They didn't have the live show that Fox Soccer had. But in fact, the convention hotels were for many years after Fox Soccer disappeared required to add beIN to their cable systems for the week of the convention.
Right.
I think that was up until 2018 or about the time when those cable systems began dropping beIN outright, which limited the options for the United Soccer coaches to do that. I didn't stay in a convention hotel, so I don't know if they made a similar arrangement now with NBC or with FS1 or FS2. But previously, it was a requirement for a hotel to get the NSCAA's business to carry Fox Soccer Channel during that week. And then after Fox Soccer Channel disappeared for the next 4 or 5 years, a requirement that they have beIN. So I don't think that that's happening anymore, and unfortunately, that's the demise of the soccer-specific channel. beIN is not a soccer-specific channel, but it's darn near close to it. Mm-hmm. So United Soccer Coaches, or NSCAA as they were known then, latched on to them once Fox Soccer, which was a soccer-specific channel, disappeared. But what I can say is that there were there was a podcast row I walked through one day, and there were about 6 or 7 live shows going on, including a show with Chris Hummer, who I know well from the D.C. area, and Charlie Bohm, who we talked about earlier. He was on that program. Then walked a little further to get down toward the expo hall, past all the coaching courses where I was trying to interact with some people, and Jason Davis was doing a live SiriusXM show. So I think what might have happened is that United Soccer Coaches have now pivoted towards the podcast and radio world. Mm-hmm. Satellite radio. Well, Sirius, I think, was always there. But the podcast world, which I had not seen before at this convention. This is the 7th or 8th time I've been to the coaches convention. And I think that says something about kind of the medium now. There are a lot of soccer people who are going to podcasts, Chris, because mainstream sports television networks are not giving soccer the kind of attention that it warrants, given the level of fandom in this country. And this is a larger theme. I don't want to spend this entire podcast on this. Maybe it's for another podcast, another day, a dedicated podcast. But I think more and more soccer fans are seeking out podcasts. In fact, I had people talking to me regularly at the show about our show and about what other podcasts to listen to, because they're not getting enough soccer news anymore without Fox Soccer Channel, with a lot of these people having lost beIN from their cable systems, etc. So that would be a big takeaway, was the emergence of podcasts on the soccer scene.
Took a long time to get there, Kartik. We started this podcast 2006, so it's been a long haul to get where we are today. I mean, 14 years, but it's still a long way to go. But that's good to hear that there's some positive things about the podcast. Now, if you haven't listened to the show before, we talk about the commentators, the production value, the latest television developments that are changing the way that you watch soccer, as well as which are the best streaming services to watch the beautiful game. So let's dive into that, Kartik. I know that most of the time this past week, in terms of the convention, which is several days, and it's pretty time intensive, long days, long nights. Did you get a chance to watch anything from this past week, or anything that stood out?
No, I mean, the one thing that I can say is that I was running around enough that I saw snippets of matches. Schalke Gladbach were on at a couple of the booths. I got constant updates about Arsenal Sheffield United because at my booth, at the company I was repping, PlayerMaker, we had four televisions around each corner of our booth, and they all had a loop of Arsene Wenger or looping videos, but one was a Wenger. So we ended up getting curiosity from people who associated themselves with Arsenal. and so talked about that. And then the Chelsea Newcastle game was thrown on at a booth right across from me, so I saw a little bit of that. Saw some clips here and there. Obviously, was I get text alerts about Dortmund matches, so I saw each of Haaland's goals from alerts. The only football I actually saw live was I land in Jacksonville. I get off the plane. I click on my NBC Sports app and start watching from about the minute 70 onward of Liverpool Manchester United. And United gave it a go for those 20 minutes and saw the goal by Salah at the end, Alisson's distribution and the indecision of De Gea whether he should come up and whether Solskjaer called him back or not. And I had my Bose headphones on, so I got the commentary of Arlo and crew loud and clear. So that was the only football I got to watch live all week, was that 20 minutes. But it was a pretty good 20 minutes to watch because for all the criticisms and critiques of United, a United team without Pogba creating as many chances as they did late on at Anfield, I thought was a pretty good sign for them. Obviously, they subsequently dropped all 3 points at home to Burnley. So that's not a good sign for them, but did get to watch that 20 minutes. As I said, I was getting text alerts about Haaland, so I'm excited about that. Next yep. Dortmund game I'll watch. And Gio Reyna, the American, made his debut, professional debut in that match, first game back from winter break. So, but that's all I got to see, unfortunately. It's funny, you're at a soccer coach's convention and everybody is talking about the sport globally, but yet you watch no soccer because the sessions start 8-9 in the morning and they go till 9 or 10 at night. There was one night where we had a field session where they were strapping up players with our player maker device. Club America is one of the customers who's bought from us, and they're one of their coaches was running the session. So they strapped both teams up, and one was DC United's academy team with player maker. That session began at 8:45 p.m. and didn't end till 10, a little bit after 10 p.m. local time. So, wow. This convention is an around-the-clock thing, which I think we remember from the Fox Soccer days, right? Because the Fox Soccer live program was always on, I think, late, right?
Yeah,
on a weeknight.
I think prime time. I think in the evening,
like 10 or 11.
Yeah,
yeah.
So quite a lot to take in there, Kartik, in terms of. Erling Haaland for Dortmund. I didn't know until this week that he's the son of Alf Inge Haaland, who used to play for Man City. I never knew that.
Right.
I'm like,
and Leeds, of course.
And Leeds,
Keane, whose career was ended by Roy Keane.
Yeah, and I missed that match. I know Friday's game against Cologne is going to be on FS2 at 2:30 Eastern time, so that's one to watch for sure. I missed that match, unfortunately, but I was away this past weekend. Also, I was at Disney in Orlando for a soccer tournament, so that took up most of my weekend. And then watching a little bit of Newcastle Chelsea on Saturday, coming back from the Disney tournament back to the hotel and catching up with Goalzone. To me, I don't watch it usually that much because I've seen most of the goals, seen most of the action. But for a morning where I missed most of the games and the goals and the stories, that was a really perfect catch up program. It's great that it's always available there. Across the weekend then too, the Liverpool-Man United match, to me, this one was very entertaining, but also because I think in many ways Jose's not involved. We've had some Liverpool-Man United games in the past, a couple of years under Jose when he was at United that were just really, really boring and tedious to watch. This was open-ended, a fantastic ending to the game with that goal from Salah. It was a really good performance by Manchester United. And then, as you said, too, against Burnley, then everything falls apart. But I enjoyed watching it. But my favorite game from this past week was Chelsea against Arsenal. Arlo White, Lee Dixon, Graeme Lasso commentating on this one. Derek Ray hosting in the studio. And this was... just when you thought it was over, just when you thought that Chelsea had won this game, Arsenal displaying a really strong spine, a really strong performance and attitude, and a fight back. And we've seen this in the past few weeks. I've been really encouraged by the way that Arsenal's been playing, even though they haven't been getting the results. They've been putting a fight in. This seems to be, to me, maybe not a turning point, but under Wenger, I mean, they oftentimes would fall apart and would have a weak middle. But they seem to be getting a spine, and they seem to be like actually playing for the manager, and the manager's really seems to have a good, kind of chemistry with his players. And that was a joy to watch. It was a really good game. Really, really entertaining, that one. Also watched, Eibar against Atleti with Phil Shane and Gary Bailey commentating. This was a pretty easy victory for Eibar, actually. And it's the first time that ever they've beaten Atletico Madrid. That was a good game to watch. Lots of rain. I watched Sporting Club against Benfica on Gol TV, the Portuguese league. This is kind of a rarity for me. I don't usually watch much of the Portuguese league. The English language commentator on this one, which I didn't catch his name, but so poor. I mean, you can definitely tell that English is the second language, but just really, really poor commentary. And it was a solo commentator, just himself. Even the halftime promos that Gol TV has, again, is broken English. Just really not very professional at all. But in this match, actually a good match, this was Benfica beats Sporting Club. And caught some other matches too. Watched Hertha Berlin against Bayern. A really good first half. Hertha Berlin almost getting the edge, but going into the half 0-0, and then second half Bayern just opened it up. And great commentary too by Keith Costigan and Ian Joy. And then Kartik, that's about it. That's about it for what I've watched this past week. But definitely Chelsea against Arsenal was my highlight. Now moving on.
I guess,
go ahead.
I guess I saw some studio shows in that I had taped the Goal Zone, so I watched. I just didn't watch the weekend ones because I didn't get back to South Florida till Monday night. But I watched each of the Derek Ray, Robbie Musto ones this week, including the one today where they talk at length about Solskjaer, and they talked about Solskjaer's record as a permanent manager. Remember when he was a caretaker manager, they were winning. They were on quite a roll. And since he had been named permanent manager, comparing him to Jose. I also want to mention Thomas Rongen, who is a colleague of mine at Player Maker, also in the interest of full disclosure, told me he was going out. You know, he left the office and he was with us in Baltimore, but left the office yesterday and told me, "Hey, I'm going to CBS. I'm taping a segment now, so I've got to go this minute." So I made sure I watched the segment. It was him and Jeremy St. Louis, and it was actually quite good. I mean, obviously, we'd be quite good with those two, but CBS showing soccer some love. It was on CBS All Access on their channel, and they on the CBS Sports channel, Sports HQ channel on CBS All Access, and they spent some time talking about various issues in the game. So that's something to look for. If you have CBS Sports HQ on CBS Sports All Access, or CBS All Access, excuse me, Jeremy St. Louis and Thomas Rongen doing this feature fairly regularly, Thomas has told me.
Interesting. Going back to Derek Ray just for a second too. I mean, we know how much Derek loves the Bundesliga. I mean, if you follow him on Twitter, he loves the Bundesliga, as we do too. Has Derek ever hosted any of the Bundesliga coverage for Fox? Because he would be a perfect fit. I mean, yes, I know Fox Sports is losing the rights at the end of the season, but I mean, that would be a great person to bring in for a weekend to do. I mean, he's a freelancer. He's available. I'm sure he'd love to do some of. I mean, he's done the Bundesliga commentary for the World Feed for the Bundesliga in Germany. But wouldn't it be wonderful to have him in the Fox Sports on the set there?
Yeah, that I don't understand why they haven't brought him in for this. When they brought him in for the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup over the summer, and his voice is often on Fox's broadcasts. He doesn't do matches every week, but he goes to Germany every third week or so and calls matches from there, and they're broadcast on Fox. So it seems like a very, very natural fit, but they, for whatever reason, they haven't done it. That having been said, when the matches are on FS1, and I have to bring this up again, yep, they go through through all the bells and whistles. They bring Ian Joy in, they bring Kate Abdo in, they bring Alexi Lawless in, they bring Stu Holden in.
Yeah, Warren Barton. Right.
Yeah, Warren Barton in. Yeah, Warren Barton is also a co-commentator. But yeah, they sometimes bring him in to the studio, and they do a good job. But then when it matches on FS2, they just flip it on and act like it's just an infomercial. Well, I still don't understand it. I mean, there's no consistency at all in what they do.
Well, that was the thing. I watched Schalke against Gladbach on Friday, which is the first game of the second half of the Bundesliga season. I mean, a great victory for Schalke, 2-0 in this one. But the way, once the game ends and the commentator signs off, there's like about 30 seconds to maybe a minute to 2 minutes of just essentially promos. It's Bundesliga promos. There's a kind of an in-house ad for the Bundesliga. There's no voiceover. There's nobody at Fox actually, you know, seems to be even working on it. They're just almost hitting play, and then once the game's over and once it hits that time to move on to go to the commercials or go to the next program, they just flip the switch. There's absolutely nobody working on that. It's crazy. I mean, I don't know. It's just Fox, you mean, any listener knows, you mean, I just get so aggravated with them. And this is something that you don't require. I mean, I'm sure they have in-house talent, voiceover, who would love to come in and you mean, basically kind of, you mean, work on the game a little bit in terms of at least having a voice there. And that does not exist when it's on FS2. All right, Kartik, TV streaming news I'll let you lead it off, but I can't think of any bigger story than this one.
Yeah, Chicharito has signed for the LA Galaxy after much speculation and years of rumors linking him to MLS, going back to 2014 when Louis Van Gaal loaned him out from Manchester United. Since then, there have been rumors. I remember the first year of Orlando City, the rumor was after they signed Kaká, they were going to sign Chicharito. So he finally signs in Major League Soccer. I think the LA Galaxy, this is a response to LAFC's success, but it's also about television ratings and Major League Soccer the whole needing the Chicharito factor to raise ratings just as the television contract's coming up. Perfect timing for him to come to the league. I tend to think that this is more ratings driven than anything.
Yeah, I mean, for those listeners who may not realize how big Chicharito is or is going to be in Major League Soccer, just get ready for this, because this is huge. To me, if I had to rank the three top players who could come to Major League Soccer that could have the most impact overnight on TV ratings, it'd be number one and number two would be joint, would be the same, would be Messi and Ronaldo. Number three would be Chicharito. I can't think of any other name in the business of soccer who could come to the United States and have an immediate impact on just increasing TV ratings. Now, we have to wait and see what those TV ratings are, but he's a perfect fit. He's somebody who's very intelligent, a great player, a goal poacher, but somebody who's skillful, who will score plenty of goals in Major League Soccer. Somebody who has a charisma about him, someone who is a good role model, somebody who is Mexican, even is going to bring in that audience.
No offense, I don't want to make this sound really patronizing, but he's more educated than the average foreign footballer too. So he's, yeah. But like you said, he's got a presence about him, but he's well spoken, speaks really good English, speaks really good Spanish. Obviously, Spanish is his mother tongue. So he's a more, because a lot of the foreign players you bring over who are big names end up being, I mean, Zlatan's a character, so we love that, but end up being like Wayne Rooney, who can't, you know, really give an interview or struggle. Chicharito has got a thing about him, mm-hmm. as you said. I guess that's he's got that it when you're in a room with him or when absolutely. You're around him. So, this is absolutely massive for Major League Soccer as a whole. I know it helps the LA Galaxy on the pitch, and they are chasing their crosstown rival. But I think more importantly than that, it is a massive TV coup. And quite frankly, one MLS needed to make a few years ago. When he went to Bayer Leverkusen, when he left Leverkusen to go, when he went to Leverkusen, MLS was chasing him. Then when he left Leverkusen to go to West Ham United, that's when they should have struck. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for him to go to a club like West Ham, which was consistently going to be fighting relegation in the Premier League. You could say, well, maybe he wanted one last paycheck in Europe, et cetera. Whatever the case, that's when MLS should have brought him here and potentially given him to the Galaxy at that point. Now, they got Zlatan, which was great, but that would have countered the LAFC surge in terms of popularity locally. It might have been a nice balancing move, but it didn't quite work out that way. I mean, but better late than never. This is a huge move.
Yeah, and to me, Kartik, this is going to be bigger than Beckham. which is saying a lot, you mean, in terms of TV ratings. So Beckham, I think his debut, I had to go back the other day and look at the numbers, and it was at the old Major League Soccer Talk website, MLS Talk, which was one of the sites that we had before World Soccer Talk, before we merged all of them together into one. And you had an article there, it was talking about the TV rating. I think the TV rating had increased by, I think, from a 0.3 to a 0.4, something like that. There was a bump with Beckham. And that would translate roughly, I think it would have been about just over a million viewers for that match with Beckham. Now, this one, the opening game of the season for LA Galaxy is on Univision.
Chris, if I recall correctly, there was also peaks in that, and I'd have to go back and look at that article, but I wrote it, so I kind of remember there were peaks, right, that he didn't start, yep. He came off the bench, so the rating started, there were 100,000, 200,000 viewers, what there normally is for an MLS match. When he came on, the rating peaked, so it was a little misleading. I think at one point there were 1.5 million people watching, and at another point there were like 200,000 people watching, so obviously, and if those of you who don't know out there, when we talk about these ratings and the numbers, it's an average of the viewership throughout the 2-hour event. So,
right.
Yeah, I can't remember what the number ended up being, but I just remember there was a huge variation because he didn't start the match.
And if you remember, Kartik, we were together in a sports bar watching this game, and we had a couple of friends. You had your LA Galaxy Beckham shirt on. I think it was a Beckham shirt.
And it was a Beckham shirt.
We were watching it. It was on ESPN, and they had a Beckham cam, which was pretty stupid. But even when he was on the sidelines, on the bench, you mean tying his shoelaces, they would zoom in on that. So it was a bit ridiculous. But I remember watching it. It was a big event. It was a big deal. Chicharito's opening game for LA Galaxy on US television is going to be against Houston. Opening game on opening weekend, and it's on Univision. I mean, so that number, just from the Spanish language audience, is going to be huge. And this is going to pull in a lot of English language viewers to watch this one, too. Into Miami's opening game at home for the new stadium, the redeveloped stadium, is going to be against LA Galaxy, and this one is on Big Fox, so Fox Network. So I think that's like what, March 14th, I think it is. That game is going to be huge in terms of having it on over the air television on the English language side too. So I mean, right off the bat, this is going to have a big impact, and I'm looking forward to watching it. I mean, I love Chicharito. I love him as a player. I've got a lot of respect for him. Lots of up and downs throughout his career, but I mean, he always tries his best, and he's a talented player. All right, moving on, Kartik, next news item. This one we've been tracking for about a year to 2 years, and this is the story about NBC, the main entertainment network, planning on launching a streaming network. And for the past year, I've been asking questions to NBC Sports PR spokespeople, saying, okay, well, so what about sports? Will this NBC entertainment streaming service, will it have a sports, and will it have soccer, and what type of soccer will it have? And the answer I always got was, we're not sure yet, it hasn't been decided yet. Well, it has been decided now, and now we know. So the service is going to be called Peacock, and it's going to launch later this year. So I think late spring, early summer. If you're a Comcast subscriber, you will get it early, I believe in April. And there's three different versions. So there's a free version, and the free version will have, it's just called Peacock, that will have a lot of access to NBC content, a lot of entertainment, news, etc. And then there's two other choices past that. There's a Peacock Premium with ads, or there's Peacock Premium without ads. So Peacock Free is free. Peacock Premium with ads is $5 a month. And then Peacock Premium with no ads is $10 a month. And it will include, for the Peacock Premium, it will include non-televised Premier League games beginning in August 2020. So this will not replace NBC Sports Gold, but it will have access to the same 140 games that you would get with NBC Sports Gold. But if you're paying $5 a month with ads for Peacock Premium and getting access to all of the NBC Sports Gold non-televised games, as well as shoulder programming. I think they said over 2,000 hours of shoulder programming, probably access to a lot of the Sky Sports. Over the course of a season, like, what, 10 months, that's $50. And depending on what NBC Sports Gold package you sign up for, you're probably saving a little bit of money. But the other thing with this, too, is it's not just the Premier League. You'd get access to a whole host of, you know, movies and shows and other things. So it's interesting. Kartik, looking at this, do you think that this is a admission that maybe that NBC Sports Gold isn't going to stick around, or do you think there's a way for NBC Sports Gold to still stay relevant while Peacock Premium kind of gobbles up some of those subscribers?
I'm not sure NBC Sports Gold sticks around. It's been clunky. It's now been rolled into the NBC Sports Act. They have different tiers for different sports. So you have to buy or different passes, right? You have to buy a Premier League pass. You have to buy a PGA Tour pass. You have to buy a Formula One. Well, they don't have Formula One anymore, but you have to buy a NASCAR pass, right? You know, right. So it's very clunky in its execution. I mean, ESPN has simplified things. With ESPN Plus, you just subscribe to ESPN Plus, you get everything. And the Disney Plus bundle, which, by the way, I have to do just for our listeners' consumption. I bought the bundle and I'm still getting charged for ESPN Plus, so I realize I probably did something wrong and I'm getting double charged. But that's just something to look for if you're in the same situation. But they simplified it, right? Disney, mm-hmm. Everything is very simple. You know, any sporting event that's ESPN is going to be on ESPN Plus. That's part of the premium tier or the OTT service. Any Disney movie or Marvel movie or National Geographic documentary is going to be on Disney Plus, and you know what's on Hulu. So I think this is an admission that the whole NBC Sports Gold concept was a little too clunky for people. And you're buying individual passes for individual sports. It made sense before ESPN Plus launched, right? Because mm-hmm. Bleacher Report does the same thing. And Fox more or less does the same thing. But now that ESPN and Disney have taken hold of the OTT market and changed and also established a really low price point, it has to be said, which is why, again, like I said, I'm being double charged. If I were being double charged by NBC Sports Gold or Fox or Bleacher Report, I'd be up in arms. I'd be like, oh my gosh, all this money's going out the window. Being double charged by Disney Plus and ESPN Plus is costing me $6 a month. So maybe mm-hmm. that's why I haven't addressed it yet. But the point being, I think that this has changed the whole landscape, and NBC Universal is now reacting.
I like that NBC Sports Gold still is more for your hardcore sports fan. So if you're a soccer fan and you mean you're down the sports track in terms of kind of living in the sports world and subscribing to that service and maybe some of the other NBC Sports Gold services. But with Peacock would be more the mainstream, and it might be people that sign up for Peacock Premium getting it for some of the, some of the entertainment coverage or some of the movies or the back catalog and original shows, and then coming across and finding the NBC Sports Gold, well, the Premier League non-televised content through there, as well as some of the shoulder programming, and maybe getting into that a little bit when they wouldn't necessarily subscribe to NBC Sports Gold. So it's a win-win on that side in terms of NBC Sports. I think in general, though, I mean, this is getting a bit crazy. I mean, you have Disney, which is effectively ABC. You have with their streaming service. You have now you have NBC with their streaming service. You have CBS with their All Access. Fox, I don't think, has anything, nothing like this yet. I'm sure they're probably working on something. Fox is a big investor in Fubo, as one example, and I think they have investments in other streaming services too. But as far as I know, there's no big Fox kind of streaming service. I'm sure it's going to happen at some point, though, too. But it does get more confusing. There's lots of questions coming in to me and to World Soccer Talk about Peacock and what does it mean, and does that now mean that NBC Sports Gold is gone? And it does not mean it's gone. It's just another option, and that option could work better for some people where they want to get other content, and then the actual price point of that non-televised Premier League soccer content plus everything else on Peacock Premium then makes sense. Then it fits in their budget because they see the value in that. Kartik, next news item. This was an interesting one that came out this week in the U.S. press.
Yeah, in the New York Times, and I have to say, sent shockwaves through the soccer community, especially here in South Florida. According to a piece this week in the New York Times, the ICC have told leaders of the top European clubs that relevant sports could no longer commit to funding the ICC annually unless it becomes a more meaningful competition on the global soccer calendar instead of just a collection of summer friendlies. While participating teams have profited from the ICC and access to the U.S. market, not just from what they've made from the ICC, but also access to markets in the U.S. and Asia. The cost of operating the competition has reportedly grown to over $100 million for Relevant, with no sign of a profit anytime soon. The owner of Relevant in the ICC is Stephen Ross, who also owns the Miami Dolphins. He's reportedly held talks in Paris earlier this month with clubs including Manchester United, Liverpool, PSG, and Juventus, requesting that they commit to a tournament with legitimate stakes or risk him pulling the plug. Relevance wants clubs to compete in something that would resemble the UEFA Champions League on tour. My take on this real quickly, Chris, is that the calendar is congested, which is a drawback. However, these clubs we know want access to the U.S. and the Asian market at the highest level. So I could see some of the clubs saying yes and some of the clubs saying no, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I don't know how it's going to shake out. It's anyone's guess.
Yeah, I think we've reached the peak, definitely, for the ICC in terms of its popularity for a few different reasons. One is this past summer, summer 2019, was a congested one. So you had Copa America, you had the Women's World Cup, you had the Gold Cup, and these tournaments really consumed most of the summer. And then meanwhile, ICC did have their tournaments around the world, but also in the United States. And they got a lot of bad press. They got a lot of lower than average attendances for ICC. And the bad press it got, even when I went to Germany to talk to the Bundesliga, I was just talking to some of the journalists there, and they were saying, like, oh, yeah, ICC is in trouble, blah, blah, blah. But it really was a congested summer. It was the main reason. People were burnt out. There was so much soccer on that summer. But then the other thing, too, in terms of the congested calendar each summer, you've got FIFA. I mean, FIFA looking at the FIFA Club World Cup, making that an annual event, looking at China to host that, and FIFA looking, seeing dollar signs, thinking, okay, hey, we could do, why aren't we doing this? Why can't we host our own tournament and bring some of the biggest clubs from around the world? Or let's make this into a thing. Let's make this let's control that summertime friendly window and be able to have our sponsors and make a ton of money off this. So ICC, in some ways, I see it being pushed out of the equation. The other thing, though, too, which is interesting that you mentioned too, Kartik, is that New York Times mentions that Liverpool met with Stephen Ross. Well, Liverpool this past summer was one of the clubs that decided not to go with ICC. They said, forget ICC, we'll do it our own way. We're going to go ahead and organize the Liverpool tour of the United States and North America, and we will go it alone. We will set up the games ourselves. We will take more of the profits for ourselves. So it's kind of interesting that that Liverpool was even included in that.
I do think one thing that should be that I can report this, I guess, maybe I've reported it before, I think I have on this show, is that part of that had to do with Jurgen Klopp's desire to keep a stable training environment, because what was happening with the ICC is that the ICC was making the deals with the training complexes, and they were shifting around from city to city, and Klopp felt like it would be better to just keep his team at Melwood or at a single place in the United States, even though they played games in different places.
Right.
And they could go back and forth. So they were able to establish that with Notre Dame. I think that would be part of the conversation here, would be Klopp and Liverpool saying, hey, can we have some input in the kind of training facilities we use if we're going to do this again?
And in hindsight, I mean, that was a good decision by Klopp based on how the team has been performing this season and based on not a lot of injuries and just the way that that team is operating. I heard too that from the Liverpool tour that Liverpool FC were disappointed with the number of fans that turned up at the airports to welcome the team. They felt that just the turnout was poor. Now again, that could be Liverpool's maybe poor planning in terms of the logistics and getting the word out there to the different cities, but yeah, for ICC, I see it continuing. I think Stephen Ross is probably being a little bit maybe playing bad cop a little bit to try to force these clubs to say, okay, all right, we want to be part of this, but we're willing to give up a little bit for the percentages and give some more back to ICC since you guys are hosting and running the show. But yeah, that's interesting things there. All right, Kartik, a couple of news items actually to finish this off, the segment off, is that the US rights to the Portuguese Primeira Liga expire at the end of the season. And according to one of my sources, current rights holder Gol TV plans on trying to renew the rights. We'll see if they stay with Gol TV in the United States or if someone else such as ESPN Plus or beIN Sports goes in for those rights. Also, in related news in terms of football and streaming services, and that is that Fanatis has acquired the rights to Sevilla TV. And so if you do subscribe to Fanatis, or if you don't, you can get Sevilla TV, which is in Spanish. It's I think it's 24/7, but just very similar to other club TV channels. They have a kind of rebroadcast of the games on delay, as well as behind-the-scenes interviews and footage, etc. And then lastly, Kartik, for those eagle-eyed viewers who love to watch either La Liga or Ligue 1, beIN Sports is making this more difficult. It may not be beIN Sports. Well, actually, in this case, it is beIN Sports. beIN Sports is making things really, really difficult. So we've talked about, I think it was on last week's show, about Sling TV changing things and moving beIN Sports in English, taking it off the Best of Spanish TV package and putting it on the Sports Extra package, which is more expensive. And now, from this past week and actually going into this weekend, is that beIN Sports has taken some of the La Liga games and Ligue 1 games that were previously on beIN Sports Connect and that are now putting it exclusively on beIN Sports Extra. Well, beIN Sports Extra is the free channel, but it's another hoop, it's another hurdle, another obstacle that viewers who are subscribed to beIN Sports Connect have to jump through and figure out a way to get beIN Sports Extra. Well, beIN Sports Extra currently is available through Roku as a free channel, but if you don't have a Roku stick or don't use Roku, then that eliminates that possibility. And they also have limited over-the-air channels for beIN Sports Extra in select cities in the United States. But again, that's not every city, so they're making it more difficult for fans to watch La Liga games. And the La Liga games are usually the Saturday morning early kickoff, usually at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's not the biggest teams, but still, it's if you're a fan of the league or a fan of one of the teams, it's that much harder. Same thing with Ligue 1 too. There's fewer games available on beIN Sports Connect because now some of them are on beIN Sports Extra. It's just, to me, it's a mess. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV ratings and the big one, Liverpool against Man United. Even though this game was not on NBC over the air, this was on NBC, SN, and Telemundo on Sunday, it was 1.2 million viewers across both NBC, SN, and Telemundo. And for NBC, SN, it was the most watched Premier League game since the opening weekend, which was Man United against Chelsea, which was maybe, I think, about 10 or 20,000 more viewers for that one. And of course, that had the Pulisic factor pushing that one up. But big numbers there for Liverpool, Man United. And I think a lot of those fans were probably Man United supporters, to be fair. And then Kartik, looking at the TV ratings and some of the numbers there, anything else jump out at you?
Not really, but I do think that number for NBCSN was pretty remarkable, 1.2 million, because that was, again, on SN and not on big NBC. So we're finding particularly when you have Liverpool and Man United playing, it doesn't matter if it's over the air or on cable.
And we've got a rare Serie A number two. We've got Milan against Udinese. And this was on ESPN2 on Sunday morning. It was an early kickoff. It was 6:30 Eastern time. And this one had 76,000 viewers. So for those listeners who ask about Serie A, what numbers the league is getting, that's a good example. Again, it's an early kickoff, though, 6:30 in the morning on ESPN2. Moving on to listener mailbag, first up is Taylor Kimpton. And Taylor says, the benefit of ESPN Plus is being able to watch replays after the fact. I'm glad they don't have a ticker for other live games because you have the option to watch it fresh and still be surprised. In this day and age, there are plenty of methods to get scores for games when you want them. I don't want them forced on me if I still want to watch it. In Kartik, actually, this weekend is FA Cup weekend. It returns Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And with the FA Cup schedule not even in front of me, there's very, very few games this weekend where I'm excited. The only one I could say I was potentially excited about was Shrewsbury Town at home against Liverpool. But you know Liverpool are probably going to play a youth squad. While it's entertaining and great to watch that youth squad, it takes away some of the appeal to me. And I think a lot of the other matches too, just that there's not a lot of David and Goliath matches available. So I'm sure I'll be watching some FA Cup, but I'm not excited heading into that weekend. Next up is Dave Brunk. Dave Brunk says, one piece of feedback for ESPN Plus. For matches in progress, I wish when you landed at the soccer home screen, it would not show the live score. It's disappointing when I'm 20 minutes late to stream a game and I see the live score. And that kind of follows Taylor's comment where it's good that they don't show the score during the game itself in terms of the live ticker or live updates of the other games. But that's true, Kartik, right? When you log in, or whether it's on your Apple TV or Roku or website, it does have the scores listed when you join the game. Well, actually, yeah. It has all the scores listed for all the games that are in progress.
Right, yeah. So I think it's very, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, sometimes I like it, sometimes it's a spoiler.
Yeah, for the FA Cup weekend, I like it. If I'm even kind of jumping back and forth and I see a score that looks interesting, I might look at it. I mean, really, they should have that option that BR Live has where they have a spoiler and no spoiler, where you can shut off those scores that are in progress. Next up is Leonid, and he says, you discussed beIN Sports, and I was once again surprised that beIN is not competing for the rights to Liga MX. I can't remember that the beIN was mentioned among the channels that participated in the negotiations. You have Sudamericana, Libertadores, and La Liga. Why not go ahead and buy Central American soccer rights or Liga MX? And he goes on to say, Liga MX kicked off a couple of weeks ago. One of the most discussed teams in the off-season was Chivas, and I wanted to watch their first official game. I watched Chivas's game on Chivas TV all last season. The broadcast began as usual. They mentioned several times their new paid site, but nothing more. In the first few minutes of the game, the commentator simply said that the continuation would be on ChivasTV.mx, and the broadcast just ended. There wasn't any explanation on their channel. Maybe there was something on the Chivas social networks, but I am not a Chivas fan, and I do not closely monitor their activity on social networks. I have to register, pay, and all this during the game. I understand that they have to earn money, and I am ready to pay, but it seems to me that they should have notified users in the right way. I was disappointed with the price of $6.99 per month and $4.99 per day, but that's another story. So a couple of things here. I mean, in terms of the Liga MX TV rights, honestly, I think at this point in time for beIN Sports, it's out of their budget. And I mean, Univision has most of the rights, almost all the rights, and Fox Sports have Club Tijuana, Santos, and Monterrey, two of the three big clubs there. But I think it's out of their budget in terms of how much they're paying for La Liga. I don't think they can afford it and be able to break even, really. And then Chivas TV, Kartik. I mean, to me, this is one of those things that it makes Chivas, the club, seem second rate. I mean, having games on their on YouTube where you can watch it and pay for it, while you mean Club America, I mean the big rival, I mean one of the, you mean the biggest one of the biggest clubs in Mexico have their games on over the air Univision and sometimes Unimas and TUDN. And then Chivas has their own service, which I'm sure you mean Chivas loves, but you mean I'm sure it's, I don't know, it's just to me, if you're a brand, I mean Chivas is not playing that well anymore anyway, but Chivas as a brand should be focused on trying to get those as many eyeballs as possible, so it's front and center among the mainstream, not the kind of the niche Chivas fans. Next,
yeah, I agree.
Next up is Edwin. Edwin says, I know that beIN Sports has the rights to La Liga for the next five or so seasons, but is there a probability they drop them before then and someone like ESPN picks them up? They already got the Copa del Rey rights from them, so that made me wonder. Kartik, what do you think on this one?
I think that with the Copa del Rey, that would actually really allow ESPN to and look, they did this when they had the Spanish Super Copa. Remember, there were those years that they would show the Spanish Super Copa over the air, both legs, before this format change. That gave them the entree into Spanish football to at least cover it more extensively. Now, with La Liga seemingly needing the exposure, who knows? I mean, I think we have to wait and see what happens here. But I do still think – I don't know. There's just part of me, Chris, that says they cannot see out this this new global deal in the U.S. component of it on beIN. I just think they need to do something.
I think it comes down to one of those things where it's like how many years does beIN Sports want to continue losing money, having paid – I mean, a gigantic number for the global rights, but for the USA, beIN Sports USA, how many more years do they want to keep it running and keep on losing money until they say, okay, enough's enough? And does that happen after Qatar, the 2022 World Cup, and they say, okay, we've gotten the most exposure that we possibly could, having beIN Sports on US channels in the United States, promoting Qatar and the World Cup and all the coverage, which I'm sure there's going to be a ton of coverage live from Qatar, with Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho and all these things. And then after the World Cup is over, does beIN Sports say, okay, do we really need to continue with the rights for La Liga in the United States, or can we go ahead and sell those off to ESPN or sublicense off to somebody? To me, that's what it comes down to. Is there a probability they drop them? It's possible. It just, and to me, again, it depends on how many more years beIN Sports wants to continue running and losing money, because not having distribution on Comcast and DirecTV is costing them millions. I mean, millions of dollars that they could be generating from subscription fees. They're not getting that. So, and then, again, beIN Sports buying the global rights to La Liga outside of Spain. I mean, that costs a lot of money too. But yeah, Copa del Rey is with ESPN Plus. They've got that. They've acquired that. beIN Sports decided not to renew the rights, and ESPN went in and gobbled them up and said, okay, we'll take them. Next up is Nash Rambler. He says, you need to let Chris Whittingham know that the old NBA on NBC theme music has been resurrected on Fox Sports college basketball broadcasts. I was surprised to hear it before a commercial break during a game a couple of weeks ago. According to Wikipedia, Fox Sports acquired the rights to use it in December of 2018. As was mentioned by Chris Whittingham, the tune is the creation of John Tesh, and the title is Round Ball Rock. Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. All right. Next up is Gerardo Guzman. And Gerardo actually posted this on iTunes. We have a couple of iTunes reviews. I'll read these out. So Gerardo Guzman says, these guys are great. Kartik, you and me? Hey, these guys are great. Okay. I love the topics and the uniqueness of the approach when it comes to TV coverage. I learned so much, and I'm very grateful these guys exist. Well, Gerardo, I'm grateful that we exist too. Next up, though, is
I want to thank him for that compliment.
It's
really nice to get that kind of feedback. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we do try really hard to be unique and to stand out from the crowd in terms of all the podcasts that are available. Hopefully, we provide you with something. Interesting, but also newsworthy, and something that you'll remember in terms of some of the tips and advice that we give, etc. So next up, though, is Al Former, who posted this on iTunes also. In an era where many MLS clubs are beginning to move in a new direction in terms of the types of signings they make, the quality of football they play, and the game day experience they provide for fans, these guys continue to bash the league as it's still stuck in the mid-2000s. There's still a long way to go, but having podcasts like this that refuse to give credit where it's due only hurts the growth of the sport in this country. In a time when we should be encouraging fans to be part of their local clubs and communities and help build a culture, they should be proud of it. All these guys do is promote the European leagues and tell Americans to watch and support those instead. So I have to chuckle a little bit, Kartik, too, because you especially, and me to a different degree, support local clubs and communities with soccer more than anyone I know. I mean, you're, I think, a board member of the Himashi FC. You've worked closely with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers in the past. You've worked with Miami FC. You have been grassroots, feet on the street, 7 days a week sometimes. I mean, just... for an English expression, slogging away, trying to really support and grow local soccer. For myself, it's a little bit different. I have 4 kids. A lot of them are playing soccer. So for me, my normal week, so to speak, is going to a lot of youth soccer games, is working with the different clubs in South Florida, previously now in North Florida, going to see some of the games, going to tournaments, and supporting local soccer in my own way. I have no local soccer team to support. And when I was in South Florida, there was the Strikers. I went to some of the games. Miami FC went to some of the games, but there was no Major League Soccer team. So for Al to say these things, I understand where he's coming from. And that if I had to guess, he probably lives in a city, probably close to where MLS has a team. The game day experience they provide for fans is great. But a lot of the viewers and a lot of listeners, and myself included, we don't have a local team. So our gateway is to watch soccer on television and to enjoy it.
Even if you do have an MLS team, there are adult amateur leagues. There are youth development academies that are not connected with MLS academies. And that was another thing I heard a lot about this weekend. The coaches' convention is the growing tension between the MLS academies and the rest of the youth ecosystem. A great article in Soccer America, opinion article by Mike Wattilia, one of the deans of soccer writers in this country. He was in Baltimore also, by the way, saying maybe U.S. soccer should get out of the youth soccer business. They should shut the DA down. Let the ECNL, U.S. club soccer, U.S. youth soccer, and all these other entities handle it. There is a lot more. I get kind of where Al's coming from, because I think people need to support their local clubs and they need to support Major League Soccer and work. And I think Major League Soccer is less flawed than maybe you think it is. However, there's a lot more going on in soccer than just MLS. So those same people, a lot of MLS fans, they won't go to a USL match. They would never come to an NASL game, as much as I would tell them, hey, come see professional soccer. Now they're all rushing to support Inter. They've never gone to a Miami FC or a Fort Lauderdale Strikers game. They don't know that we have about 20 amateur adult teams in South Florida between UPSL, NPSL, and PDL. They don't know how many USL teams we've had in the state through the years. And then talk about the youth soccer space, that's a whole other thing. So I think MLS fans, many MLS fans in the same, are as myopic as the European fans, mm-hmm. the Premier League fanboys in the United States, and I will call them that, fanboys, who just watch the Premier League and they don't get involved in local soccer at all and look down upon anything that goes on in this country. I think a lot of MLS fans are just as insensitive as those Premier League fanboys, as I call them, just in a different way. And they think they're being self-righteous supporting local soccer, but then they're only supporting one segment of local soccer. And a segment of of local soccer in a lot of cases that's trying to crush everything else that goes on at the grassroots level. So there's a lot more to this picture domestically than just Major League Soccer.
Yeah, it's almost like, I think for a lot of these listeners too, well, not listeners, I mean, our specifically, it's either you support MLS or you don't. And I think what, Alexi Lalas had a tweet, a couple of years ago that says something that if you don't support MLS, do you support soccer? Or something along those lines. And I was really upset about that. I still am to this day.
If I support a USL club, if I am in St. Petersburg, the Tampa St. Peter area, which, by the way, is a top 15 metro area or top 20 metro area in the country, they're never going to have an MLS team because Orlando is 60 miles away, 70 miles away. Am I not allowed, if I just watch the Rowdies, am I not an American soccer fan?
No.
If I'm not following MLS?
Nope. You can't, Kartik. Sorry. But yeah, one last thing from my side is that we bash a lot of the leagues. We bash La Liga. We bash the Premier League. We bash the Bundesliga.
Well, I bash the Premier League all the time.
You do more than I do. But yeah. I don't think there's any league that we don't bash. But we also talk about the leagues that we love and the things we love about the different leagues. But even though we bash the other leagues, we don't get one-star reviews from those fans. It just seems to be the Major League Soccer fans that give us the one-star reviews. Not that I mind the one-star reviews, because sometimes I think it's kind of funny, but it is one of those things that I just find it really interesting that the MLS fans are very, very sensitive. And yes, fanboys of Premier League or fanboys of La Liga can get the same way too, but I just have to laugh when I read those. A couple more to go, Kartik, on the listener mailbag. This one came in through email today from Alex. Alex says, just want to see if you were going to interview beIN Sports or any of the streaming services like YouTube TV. If you do, it'd be great if you could ask them on plans to expand on adding beIN Sports. Was going to cut cable for Fubo TV, but after they lost the regional sports channels, I have had to rethink it. I don't have beIN Sports in my current TV plan without paying $20 a month more. Right now, looks like YouTube TV and Sling are my replacements. Every time I'm speaking to beIN Sports and other streaming services too, I'm always talking about availability of not just beIN Sports, but other soccer networks too. So oftentimes, I mean, I think beIN Sports, I probably met with them a few weeks ago and was asking for the latest updates on beIN added to the different services. And there will be more services where beIN Sports will be added soon. Well, the beIN Sports Extra service, so we know that for sure. YouTube TV would be an interesting one to interview. I don't think that they have anyone that specifically focuses on the sports or soccer side that I know of, but that's one I'd love to interview them to find out more about them. YouTube TV, I mean, as a good example, does not have beIN Sports, and they have Fox Soccer Plus, which is strange that they have that but not beIN Sports, because I mean, Fox Soccer Plus really has hardly any soccer. It's mostly, rugby and AFL, etc. But yeah, Alex, so anytime I get an opportunity, I'm always looking for interviews and to find out the latest news so I can give that back to you guys either through the podcast or through the website worldsoccertalk.com. Last but not least, Daniel says, Kartik, I wonder if you've read Guy Marcotti's article on squad reductions and might comment on it for the pod.
I have. I think was really telling about it was that Marcotti's thought process is there has to be now some sort of way of bringing the top clubs back or creating some degree of competition between, because look, I think I picked on the Premier League right a lot, which is went through, you know, I bashed the Premier League a lot. I picked on the Premier League for not being nearly as competitive as it was, in my opinion, 5 years ago. Certainly not as competitive as it was 7-8 years ago. I mean, I think about just the randomness of results you used to get in the league any given weekend. But that's been the case throughout most of European leagues. I think La Liga's recent spat of upsets with Barcelona and Real Madrid constantly dropping points are more about the two of them coming back to the pack rather than anything else. In fact, Atleti seems to be regressing also. So Marcotti realizes there is a problem, right? Bayern and Juventus exemplify this problem, as do any number of situations in other leagues, right? In second-tier leagues in Europe, which aren't particularly competitive. Scotland, until maybe the last couple months, being the most extreme example of that in Europe. But so Marcotti is thinking squad reductions now might be the way to address this. Instead of having this situation like in the Premier League, where you can have 25 players above an age, you know, on your designated squad, and then any number of other players after that, and then loaning out, if you're Chelsea, loaning out 40 guys. If you tightly reduce squads to 20 or 22 guys, then especially when you have this fixture congestion and you have the Man Cities and the Liverpools who can rotate, Liverpool can start a Lallana and an Oxlade-Chamberlain when they're rotating. Manchester City can start Riyad Mahrez or Bernardo Silva when they rotate, right, or Gabriel Jesus. So instead of having that situation where, particularly with these midweek fixtures, we see that there's a great advantage for the Liverpools and the Man Cities or the Bayerns or the Juventuses, that there is then, if you have smaller squads and you only allow a certain number of senior players on squads, Marcotti's thinking maybe it things become more competitive. In theory, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But what we found recently is a lot of theoretical things tend to boomerang. So we'd have to see how this would go into practice. By the way, Marcotti, Daniel, is really on the cutting edge of some of these ideas. Another thing he's advocated recently is the 60-minute clock replacing 90 minutes, 30-minute halves, where the clock stops and restarts.
Oh,
not a very popular idea, not something I'm terribly comfortable with, but it's something that he says will also eliminate the chronic time wasting we have and gamesmanship.
Which is probably true. Well, I think the other way around. So watching a lot of high school soccer where the clock stops once that time is done, the clock stops, there's no added time, is what ends up happening is a lot of the teams, the high school teams, if they're leading, say, 1-0 or something like that, will purposely slow the game down way, way down, waste time with throw-ins, free kicks, and the referee can't add any more. Well, maybe they can, but they don't add any more time on. So it just eats up the clock. So by the time it gets to, 10 seconds to go, a minute to go, you know that it's a minute to go, and that's it, and the game's over. There's no additional time after that. So, but the squad reductions, that I see a lot of value in, especially when you have clubs, Chelsea, Man City, or others too, that are just loaning so many of these players out that they have little chance of actually playing first team football, will end up going to clubs like Swansea City, thank you, and other clubs from the Championship to Europe.
Louise, right? He just scored for Villa against Watford in that big game the other day.
Yep.
So he never played a match for Manchester City. He was bought specifically as an investment because Manchester City can afford to do that, and they flipped him, sold him to Villa for $19 million, and made like $15 million on him.
Wow.
And Chelsea's been doing that too. So this is the other thing. Manchester City and Chelsea in particular have gamed the financial fair play system, because I don't think casual fans realize how many players both Chelsea and Manchester City have sold that have played just a handful of matches for the first team.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made handsome profits on. So, in fact, their net spends are not as high as you think they are when it comes to FFP.
Yeah, well, Gab Marcotti, you can always check him out at ESPN.com, but also on ESPN FC quite often, being on there as one of the pundits and sharing his opinions. And I love Gab. He's got some really, really good insight into the game and a great communicator. All right, well, we want you to have your say. So you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com, and we'd love to read those out on air. So that could range anything to do with questions about TV coverage, streaming coverage, commentators, production values, anything related to the soccer media business. We'd love to talk about that and share those with other listeners too, that can definitely appreciate from the questions you may have. whether they're like deep, thoughtful ones or ones that sounds kind of silly, but actually are great questions, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Kartik, and then before we close, where can listeners find you and keep up to date on your latest writings about Florida or politics or soccer? Where's the best place they can find you on social media?
So yeah, politics and Florida and history, Florida history, including some stuff on St. Augustine. Just spend a couple days in your neck of the woods, one of my favorite cities in the world, or historic small towns in the world, I should say. St. Augustine, not really a city. At thefloridasqueeze.com, you can check out my Twitter feed at KKFLA737, my writings here at World Soccer Talk, worldsoccertalk.com, and also at yanksarecoming.com. Little shameless plug here, we're going to be ramping up the Yanks Abroad coverage on that side, on that site, in the next few weeks, and I'll be taking the lead on that. So a lot more Christian Pulisic and Tyler Adams and Gio Reyna coverage, yep. Weston McKennie, etc. Really an emphasis on the guys playing in England and Germany. That's where the bulk of really competitive American players for the national team are, and of course keeping an eye on Sergiño Dest down at Ajax, who I think got a lot of publicity globally, including on the BBC. I saw it on the ticker on BBC mm-hmm. World when he pulled out of the camp in Qatar that Ajax was involved in because of his fear of safety, because he's a U.S. international. So we'll be doing some of that at Yanks Abroad at yanksarecoming.com in the near future.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and WorldSoccerTalk.com, as well as anywhere else that they have podcast players. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media, and whether it's a one-star review or a four-star review, give us a review on iTunes. Let us know how we're doing. We'd love to get your feedback, and oftentimes we'll read those out on air also. So Kartik, heading into a big weekend. Well, hopefully it'll be a big weekend. We've got the Dortmund Cologne game on Friday, 2:30 Eastern time. Haaland, hopefully another hat trick. Here we come. ain't no pressure. But I'm sure a bunch of other games too, FA Cup, etc. This weekend. But what should they do?
Enjoy your football.